The last veteran of the first battle on the Isonzo was alive and well in a leafy suburb of Rome in 2004. Born in December 1894, Carlo Orelli was conscripted on 24th of May 1915 and sent off to the Carso after notional training. Nearly 90 years later, he sat in sharp sunlight beside the opened shutters of his bedroom window. He was very still under his dressing gown, silk scarf and cloth cap. Only an index finger moved, tracing a pattern on his leg. His blue eyes were filmy. Orelli was a socialist, but in the debate over intervention that raged in Italy in 1914 and 1915, he switched sides, like Mussolini. "Supposedly it was all secret," he says, "but everyone knew the war was coming." The troop train left from Naples. "It was a lovely day, I can recall it well, a great blue sky. We thought we were going to the front to take Trento and Trieste, which were under Austria. We had gone to war to conquer those territories, which were Italian. Austria had taken them from us. Then we would go forward, forward. We expected a short war, not one that would last so many years." His words came awkwardly, in short breaths, as memories surfaced. "Was it a war of conquest, then, or one of liberation?" I asked. "Liberation," he said firmly. "We were not taking what was theirs." Were the troops eager for war? Not enthusiastic, no. They thought it was a fine thing to reconquer our lands, le terre nostre, but they weren't prepared for what faced them at the front. He was a non-commissioned officer in the 3rd Company of the Siena Brigade. Arriving at Sagrado at the end of May in cotton uniforms and berets, with boots of light canvas, the Italians pillaged the linen they found in the houses. Austrian stuff. As well as blocks of sugar that were left in a factory yard. The men were mostly from Calabria, in the south. "You couldn't understand a word they said. Good illiterate peasants. I wrote their letters home for them. Oh, you people today don't know how backwards Italy was in those times. They couldn't read or write, but they never complained. They died in silence." Orelli did not blame the army for poor training. "War isn't something you teach. You do it and that's all," he says. "Attack, fire, take cover when you have to. That's it. And then bring in the dead." The Italians were hugely disadvantaged at the outset. The Austrians had fine covered trenches with bunkers. They shot at us from loopholes while we were in shallow holes, ordered to charge the enemy with bayonets. It was attacks, attacks all the time, from dawn to dusk. The Austrians on Mount San Michele didn't have to shoot much. They only had to hold their positions and wait to kill us in the open, says Orelli. While the positions on San Michele during the first battle were not really that much better than the Italian positions, though they soon became so, Orelli's recollection is true to the Italian's sense of being desperately unprepared, and he was correct about the difference in firepower. He says, "You cannot have any idea what an Austrian 420mm howitzer sounds like. Quite different from what you would expect. It's not like in a film. It was too far away to make a boom. It was more of a rumble, a distant roar, and then a whistling that grew louder and louder the closer it came. Then we knew the shell was about to hit. It didn't always explode at once. Sometimes it didn't explode at all. That's the lottery of death." The Italians did not have any 420s, or any 305s for that matter. They had a few 149mm guns at Sagrado, targeting those Habsburg trenches. The Italians' battle cry was "Savoy!" while the enemy screamed "Hurrah!" or "Živela Austria!" meaning "Long live Austria!" if they were Croatians or Bosnians. On Mount San Michele and Mount Sebusi, the armies were 100 or 200 metres apart. There was a tacit agreement, Orelli says, not to make each other's lives even worse than they had to be. Sniping was often suspended between attacks. Did you, I ask him, hate the enemy? No, 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 he insists. They were under orders, just as we were. War is war. If you try to kill me, I'll try to kill you. But there was no hatred. When we took prisoners, they were sent to work the land in Italy for the rest of the war. There was no mistreatment. It was the same with Italians taken prisoner. The Austrians, who had everything, offered our men fine food because they knew we had nothing. We asked them to taste it first, in case it was poisoned, but it was all good stuff. It was a war without hatred, he repeated. Not like nowadays with all this... His attention drifted, following some elusive connection. The pause lengthened. There's war everywhere now, he announced. A nation is dying today. The one led by that general with the beard. A prisoner now. What's his name? He meant Saddam Hussein, the Iraqi dictator, lately captured but not yet executed. Lightly wounded in the first battle, Orelli was riddled with shrapnel in the second. By this point, only 25 men of the 330 who had gone up to the line with him in May were still unharmed. He left the front in September 1915, never to return. So the attitudes that crystallized in him, including the conviction that gentlemanly conduct had persisted, reflected those first months of fighting. Orelli had not seen the spiral down into brutality, and perhaps did not believe it ever occurred. I remember the mountains, said Orelli, making a final effort for my benefit. Places where we fought. I remember my part of the front, at Sagrado on the Isonzo, where the artillery was. I remember waking one morning and finding myself in a cemetery. But many things I don't remember any longer, he finished, with a hint of frustration. Forgetting was a new experience, still resented. Even so, he recognized the names of hills on the Carso more quickly than his children's names. He wanted to see those places again, but his legs were not what they had been. His parting handshake was warm and light, like holding a bird. Many greetings to your family, he said. And when you visit Rome again, come and see me. He patted the arms of his chair. I'll be right here. There is so much talk nowadays about Trento and Trieste, and the war to liberate them, he told his last interviewer a few months after I had met him. But nobody really knows what it was like. He died in January 2005, a month after his 110th birthday.